Part 1. England. Chapter 1. It was the strong sense of family that the O'Malleys possessed that brought Seamus O'Malley to his niece before her hurried departure for England. In his fine stone bishop's house a few miles down the road from Burke Castle, he had awakened suddenly in the middle of the night and known that she needed him. The old man had gotten up from his warm bed, dressed himself, and ridden off up the hill to aid her. Seamus O'Malley agreed with his niece's assessment of the situation. She had to go to England for the Tudor wench's help. The bishop was a realist. He didn't like the English, but they held the whip hand. He suggested that the news of the McWilliams' death be kept secret, that he be buried surreptitiously. It was easy enough to do, for the entire castle still slept, and the guards on the walls couldn't see what went on inside the building. With the aid of the family priest and Rory Burke's personal servant, the body was placed in the family crypt. The final mass was said in the early dawn, after Skye had ridden off under cover of darkness. Then Seamus took up residence in Burke Castle, and, in league with the priest, the servant, and Connor Fitzburke, conspired to keep the rest of Ireland from learning of Rory Burke's death, while Skye hurried to gain English aid before little Porrick Burke's inheritance was stolen. The lady of the castle, said to be keeping a vigil for the ailing McWilliam, was in truth galloping across Ireland to Waterford Harbour, where several of her ships were presently berthed. The need for haste was so imperative that Skye and Daisy rode 18 hours a day, stopping only to change horses, to eat a hot meal, and to rest a few hours daily. They stayed only with trusted friends, sleeping in the chilly lofts of their barns during the daylight hours to avoid curious eyes and more curious questions. Even the most loyal servants gossiped. At Waterford, Skye took passage upon her stepmother's vessel, the Banerie à Cure, Queen of the Mist. No sooner had the ship cleared the harbour than she commanded the captain, "Kelly, set a course for Lundy Island." Then she disappeared into the master's cabin with her tiring woman. Daisy sighed with relief at feeling the swell of the open sea and the chill late winter wind that filled the sails.
"Every mile we galloped, I thought sure the Dublin English would be after us, my lady."
Skye laughed, relieved herself. She always felt vulnerable upon the land, but upon the sea none was her equal.
"Daisy, you speak as if you were Irish yourself," she teased her tiring woman. "Have you been with me so long that you're beginning to feel Irish?"
"I'm English all right, m'lady, but I'm Devon English, and that's a whole lot better than being Dublin English. In Devon we're kind people, but those Dublin English are wolves of the worst sort."
Skye nodded in agreement and then said,
"We've a good strong breeze behind us. With luck, we'll make Lundy in 2 days' time."
"He'll be glad to see you," Daisy remarked quietly, understanding her lady's need. Like most trusted servants, she knew all the intimate details of her mistress's life. They'd been together a long time, and if Skye had grown more beautiful with the years, Daisy had changed not a whit. Small and apple-cheeked, her soft brown eyes were loving of Skye and watchful of others. She was no beauty, and never had been, being as freckled as a thrush's egg, but her gap-toothed smile was warm and merry.
"I have to see him," Skye replied. "He is the only friend I have left, Daisy, besides Robert Small, and Robbie is at sea. He is not expected back for at least another month. I must talk with Adam."
She curled up on the large master's bed, drawing a down coverlet over her.
"God's bones, Daisy, but I'm tired. Take the trundle and get some sleep yourself, girl. We've ridden hard these past 3 days."
Daisy needed little urging to pull the trundle from beneath the bed, unbind her soft brown hair, lie down and fall quickly asleep. But her mistress, for all her exhaustion, lay awake and thinking. While Daisy snored, making gentle little blowing noises, Skye thought back over the last few years and of how she had met Adam de Morisco, the Lord of Lundy Island. Skye's third husband, Geoffrey Southwood, the Earl of Lynmouth, had died in a spring epidemic along with their younger son. Their older son, Robin, had been put in the custody of the Queen's favourite, Robert Dudley, the Earl of Leicester. Dudley, however, had used his office to rape Skye, and when she had complained...